You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Award-winning science and nature writer David Quammen's latest report is about the possibility that some cancers may be contagious. Tumors recently found in the Tasmanian devil population appear to be spreading from one animal to the other, and there have been other instances of transmitted cancer reported over the years. The article is in the April issue of Harper's Magazine, and I'm pleased that it brings David Quammen back to the show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Good to talk with you again.
When did the problem with the Tasmanian devils first come to light?
It appeared in early 1996. There was a wildlife photographer, a Dutchman named Christo Bars, who went to Tasmania to photograph Tasmanian devils. He'd done that before. This time, he didn't find nearly as many as he usually did. And when he did get a few photographs, he noticed they had these strange growths like tumors on their faces.
And that's actually led to the naming of this as devil facial tumor disease?
That's right. They didn't realize at first that it was a true cancer, a true tumor, but more and more evidence accumulated over the next few years, and now there is very solid scientific evidence that it is a cancer that is passed in the form of tumor cells from one individual to another, generally on the face, because Tasmanian devils have the unfortunate habit of biting one another in the face.
So it's being passed through the saliva?
It seems to be passed as actual cells broken off. These tumors, they're sad and hideous, and they grow large on the face, and the larger ones are crumbly, friable, almost like feta cheese. So the tumor cells break off, and they fall into the wounds, it seems, of another devil, and take root there and grow, which is not supposed to be able to happen, but it does.
Are the animals dying from cancer or from the starvation that results from having these facial tumors?
Well, it's sort of a combination of the two. These tumors fill eye sockets and blind the animals. They fill throats, make it impossible for them to swallow. And so the animals eventually die of a combination of the direct effects of the cancer and these indirect effects, making it impossible for them to find food and eat.
When did scientists begin to suspect that the tumors were contagious?
Well, into the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, 2003, they started to get more and more evidence. But then the real proof came with a paper in the journal Science in 2006 by a couple of researchers in Tasmania who showed with something called chromosome karyotyping photographs of the actual chromosomes in the nuclei of different tumor cells, that these different tumor cells from different animals all had chromosome aberrations that were identical. Instead of having 14 healthy chromosomes, they had 13 chromosomes variously mangled, and the chromosomes were all mangled in the same way in different tumors, and that provided proof that this was a continuous cell line, not cancer that was being triggered individually in different animals by a chemical or a virus or something like that.
Well, we do know of cancers that are caused by viruses, cervical cancer, caused
right.
by the human papillomavirus or HPV. What's the difference between a cancer caused by a contagious virus and the kind of transmissible cancer that this seems to be?
Well, that's right. And when I've described this, even to medical people, their first instinct is to say, oh, well, clearly it's a virus. That was a hypothesis at the beginning. But a cancer caused by a virus is triggered when the virus passes from one individual to another. It's very, very common routine for viruses to be passed from one individual to another. Then when the cancer is triggered, it is because the virus has caused mutations in the cells of that individual's own body. And with enough mutations, those cells can become precancerous, then cancerous. But if that occurs, then the cells themselves that are multiplying out of control are not alien cells. They're the animal or the individual's own cells. And the immune system generally doesn't recognize them, attack them, reject them, because they are the creature's own cells. But you would not find this form of chromosome aberration repeated over and over again if the cancer was being triggered independently by a virus in each individual.
Are the Tasmanian devils vulnerable to this sort of thing because they're marsupials? Have there been other cases of transmissible cancers in the past?
Well, there have been other cases, but it doesn't seem to be the mere fact that they're marsupials. They are marsupial carnivores. They're found only on Tasmania. That's the little island state south of mainland Australia. And there's no such pattern or phenomenon that's been recognized in any other marsupial species so far. There is something that occurs in dogs called canine transmissible venereal tumor.
And we've known about that for a long time, haven't we?
And we've known about that. Scientists have known about that for more than 100 years. It's not as aggressive, it's not as dramatic, not quite, as the devil facial tumor, but it's essentially a sexually transmitted disease, a sexually transmitted cancer in dogs. It can be cured, and it's a different case in some interesting ways, including the fact that, back to the Tasmanian devil, one of the things that seems to make it possible for this transmission of cancer in the Tasmanian devil is that they have a very small gene pool. Their population has been severely reduced a couple of times over the last 150 years. The population has bounced back, but the genetic diversity doesn't bounce back as quickly, so that these animals genetically are very much similar to one another, and their immune systems don't seem to be able to recognize the tumor.
My guest is David Quammen, who has written an article called Contagious Cancer, The Evolution of a Killer, for the April issue of Harper's Magazine. What about humans? Has transmissible cancer ever occurred in humans?
Well, the first thing I should say is that it's very, very rare, very, very improbable. And the point of this story that I'm telling in Harper's is not to raise alarm bells in people that human cancers are likely soon to become transmissible. That is not the case.
Although we do know that things mutate and that sometime in the future that could be a possibility.
It could be a possibility. And there have been cases, and there continue to be cases, of cancer transmission from one individual to another among humans. For instance, some years ago there was a 19-year-old laboratory worker who jabbed herself with a needle containing some cancer cells from, if I recall correctly, it was a colon cancer patient. And this lab worker found herself with a colon tumor growing in the palm of her hand.
That can happen?
It can happen. It has happened. It's very rare. There are just a few cases.
There was a mother-daughter transplant that occurred.
Right. That was done about 40 years ago. For experimental purposes, I'll put that in quotation marks, experimental, because it was a dubious experiment, but a 50-year-old cancer patient had tumor cells taken from her and transplanted into her healthy 80-year-old mother. This was supposed to tell something about immune system reaction to cancer. The cancer patient herself immediately died of, a perforated colon and an ulcer, and so there was no point in continuing the experiment to try and save her, but the cancer cells were not immediately surgically removed from her mother, and they metastasized, and 15 months later, her mother died of the cancer that had been put into her from her daughter.
Well, nowadays we're hearing more and more about experiments using vaccines that employ weakened or dead cancer cells. Would they have with them the danger of transmission?
I don't know, Leonard. There is work on a vaccine for this cancer in Tasmanian devils going on in Tasmania now. In terms of the work on cancer vaccines for humans, I'm not a cancer biologist myself. I talk to a lot of cancer biologists about this particular phenomenon, but I shouldn't try and answer that question for you.
The big problem with the Tasmanian devils is that, as you said, they bite each other's faces.
Mm-hmm.
Is one way to prevent them from killing off the whole population to prevent them from biting each other?
Well,
is that possible?
It's probably not possible. It's the scientists in Tasmania are looking at a number of different possible ways to deal with this, but it's in the nature of Tasmanian devils to bite one another in the face. They fight a lot. They scrap over the carcasses that they scavenged. The males fight when they compete for females. And even when males and females mate, there's biting in the face. So if you're a Tasmanian devil, it's just something that you're going to do. And it's something that's, because it's part of the mating rituals, it means that in a sense, this facial tumor too is a sexually transmitted disease. And that has implications for the possible course of the disease, whether it can, in fact, take the Tasmanian devil down to or close to the point of extinction.
And nobody has yet come up with any way of treating this, I imagine.
No, they have not. And they're working on quarantine. They're trying to separate regions of the island that are still unaffected from those areas where the tumor is rampant. Experimental work is going on. Culling of sick devils is going on. There is a captive population of devils that is healthy, and the plan is to breed them and possibly release them in a small island offshore from Tasmania that has been protected and maintain sort of a rescue population of the devil on that small island. But that idea is controversial, too.
I'm talking with David Quammen, Quammen, whose article, Contagious Cancer, The Evolution of a Killer, is in the April issue of Harper's Magazine. We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about that evolution part of the story. Stay with us. We're back with David Quammen, whose article, Contagious Cancer, The Evolution of a Killer, is in the April issue of Harper's Magazine. One of the scientists you interviewed, Anne Marie Pierce, described this Tasmanian devil tumor as a parasitic cancer. What did she mean by that?
Well, she meant that the line of tumor cells itself functions almost as though it were an individual animal, a creature, that that parasitizes one Tasmanian devil after another. Another of the scientists, too, told me that this tumor is essentially a parasite. And what she meant was not simply a species of parasite, but an individual parasite, that all of the tumors on all of the Tasmanian devils that were affected essentially were pieces of one creature that was parasitizing this other species.
And would this parasite have existed before this recent epidemic, or is this an example of evolution at work?
It is evolution at work. Presumably, this tumor arose not very long before it was noticed by the photographer in 1996. If it had been around earlier and had the capability of being transmitted from one individual to another, people would have noticed it. It would have shown up. So it seems to be a result of relatively recent mutations that caused these cells to become more and more aggressive and eventually to become malignant, cancerous cells capable of not just metastasis within one individual, but transmissibility from individual to individual.
Would this be less likely in humans because the cases that you talked about involved people with similar genetic makeup or actually injecting a cancer into someone?
That's right. Those are the special conditions, and it does seem to be much less likely to occur in humans, not impossible. I talked with one eminent cancer researcher, Robert Weinberg of the Whitehead Institute at MIT, and he told me, well, it is a special case because tumor cells, cells of any sort from a human body, but tumor cells, as one case, are effete, are vulnerable. They do not travel well. They're not like bacteria or viruses that can be resistant in the external environment, form spores, or resist drying out, resist ultraviolet light. Living cells from one animal tend to die when they are outside that animal. So his point was that yes, there is a sexually transmitted tumor in dogs, and yes, there is a tumor transmitted by biting in Tasmanian devils, but those are very special circumstances of close physical contact and passage of cells, unlikely to occur in humans, although presumably, again, a sexually transmitted tumor would be just as possible in humans as it would be in dogs.
Well, we have been told that HIV AIDS viruses do not survive outside of the body.
Mm-hmm.
They're also very vulnerable, and
right.
yet we have a major epidemic. So right. if we had some kind of a mutation in a human cancer, then it might very well be possible. And we haven't, until recently, we haven't really connected cancer and evolution, have we?
No. It's relatively recent decades anyway. There was a time not too far in the past where you could go through medical school, you could become a respected oncologist or a cancer researcher, and you wouldn't have needed to have studied evolutionary biology.
There's a man named Peter Knoll who was suggesting that could be links between cancer cells and natural selection way back in 1976.
Exactly. Peter Knoll published a paper, sort of a landmark paper in 1976, called The Clonal Evolution of Cancer. And he suggested this idea that tumors themselves perhaps could evolve toward more and more aggressive forms just as species evolve toward better and better adaptations. At that point, it was a theoretical idea. A number of cancer researchers talked about it in the decades following, but no one really found a way to test that idea experimentally. And then a young fellow named Carlo Maley, a cancer researcher at the Wistar Institute in Philadelphia, teamed up with some people who were studying a human condition called Barrett's esophagus, a precancerous condition of the esophagus. And the Barrett's esophagus people had a whole lot of data about different patients who had this condition, some of whom had progressed to cancer, some of whom had not. And Carlo Maley and his colleagues looked at this to examine the hypothesis that tumors were evolving. And they found very strong evidence that natural selection among the cells of a given tumor does cause evolution toward more and more aggressive forms.
Is that what's called epigenetic modification of DNA?
That's a little bit different. There is genetic modification and epigenetic, which means beyond or separate from genetic modification. But no, what Maley was talking about was genuine genetic modification of the different tumor cells. When a precancerous growth begins, one of the things that's happened is that growth inhibiting signals have been thrown off so that the tumors, the cells, start to multiply, start to replicate themselves more quickly. And the more they replicate, the greater the chance that mutations will occur. As the mutations occur in this body of cells, genetic diversity is created. Very, very small differences from one cluster of cells to another, but still differences significant enough that in crowded conditions, in competitive conditions, those different clusters of cells are competing against one another, and what you have is essentially the survival of the fittest.
Darwin in action.
There it is.
You also cite recent cancer studies that go beyond evolution and begin to consider ecology. How does ecology come into play?
This is fascinating to me. If you think that tumor cells can evolve, then it means that they're becoming more and more aggressive. They become capable of moving from one place to another. They become capable of invading tissues. They become capable of metastasizing from one part of a body to another. And then there is an ecological phenomenon that ecologists refer to as dispersal. Dispersal is when a group of animals or plants move from one parcel of habitat to another on sort of a long-shot, adventuresome lurch. For instance, a group of pigeons are blown offshore in a storm and carried to a new island where there are no pigeons, but there's good habitat. So they settle there, they colonize, they're successful, they breed, and they have established themselves in a new place. That's dispersal. What Carlo Maley and his colleagues proposed is that not only do tumors evolve, but they are capable of dispersal in that sense. Metastasis from one part of the body is to another is one form of dispersal, but transmission from individual A to individual B is another and more adventuresome form of ecological dispersal.
Does that bring us back to the Tasmanian devils?
And that brings us back to the devils. That seems to be what's happening. This line of tumor cells has evolved to become aggressive, adventuresome, and it is dispersing from one individual to another, colonizing all of the devils that it finds on the island of Tasmania.
My guest is David Quammen. His latest article in Harper's Magazine, the April issue, is called Contagious Cancer, The Evolution of a Killer. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. What is somatic evolution as opposed to organismic evolution?
Somatic evolution is what we've been talking about. Evolution at the cellular level, evolution of one cell versus another. And organismic evolution is essentially the evolution at the species level of different groups of multicellular animals and plants.
How does somatic evolution result in cancer?
Well, again, it's what I've been describing, Leonard. It's the fact that mutations in precancerous growths generate genetic diversity, and those different genetic variants are competing with one another for resources, for space, for blood, for nutrients. This is as the precancerous growth increases in size. And because there are limits on those resources, the more aggressive, the more well-adapted of the individual lines of cells are more successful, and they compete out. They outcompete the less aggressive cells, and what you get is a more and more aggressive, more and more likely to metastasize malignant tumor.
Is that why certain cancers are more common than others?
Not necessarily. There are probably a lot of environmental reasons why certain cancers are more common than others. But the one thing that most people aren't aware of is that most of the cancers that we get, for instance, as humans, occur in epithelial cells. And those are edge cells, surface cells, the surface of the colon, the surface of the skin, the surface of the stomach. And the reason those kinds of cancers are more common is because those lining cells have a higher turnover rate. They wear out, they are replaced by new cells. There is this constant, relatively high-speed cell replication. And the more cell replications you get, the greater the chance of mutations in the course of replication, therefore the greater the chance of tumor cells beginning.
And that's why older people are more likely to get cancer?
Absolutely. We have a certain number. I think we have something like 30 trillion cells in our body, but in the course of a long human lifetime, those cells go through something like 10,000 trillion replication events, cell replications. And the more cell replications you have, the greater the likelihood that you will accumulate mutations and therefore have a cancer begin to grow. And you need not just one mutation, but you need a sequence of something like 5 or 6 mutations in a given cell line before all of the cancer defenses that we have in our bodies are overthrown, circumvented, and a cancer gets going.
Well, the statistics are that 40% of the population will be diagnosed with cancer, but that means 60% will not.
That's true, but all those 60% will have a loved one, a friend, an acquaintance, somebody they know. So that's one of the points that I make in the piece, that cancer is a lonely disease, partly because of this fact that it's generally understood to be very private and non-transmissible. but it's a cruel disease, it's an awful disease, but it's a very democratic disease. It's nearly universal. We will all experience it in one way or another, either directly or through friends and loved ones. And so I think it's important that we understand the biology of it just a little bit better.
Well, just one more question. This is from a caller who wants to know, if you inject melanoma cells into a healthy person, would that new person get melanoma? And if not, could we use what happens to figure out how to fight melanoma or any other kind of cancer?
Well, that's a good question, and it's exactly the question those researchers were asking themselves 40 years ago when they injected those cells from the daughter into the mother.
But both wound up dying.
They both wound up dying.
So that wasn't a good experiment, and we're hoping that people are a little more sophisticated about these things today.
They certainly are.
But you're not suggesting here that we should start worrying about cancers being transmitted among humans in the near future.
No, we should not. This is the point of this article, is to make people understand, to help people understand the biology of cancer a little bit better, to make it seem less a lonely disease, to understand what's going on with this wonderful but little-known species in Tasmania, and to be less sort of darkly terrified by cancer and more realistically informed about it.
And also to be concerned that Tasmanian devils could be extinct within 25 years if somebody doesn't come up with some solution.
Absolutely. We should care about that.
David Quammen's article, Contagious Cancer, The Evolution of a Killer, is in the April issue of Harper's Magazine. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Leonard, always a pleasure to talk with you.